Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. KVOI AM 1030 is the home of the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, June 29th, 2012. Hope you're having a great day and looking forward to a good weekend somewhere where it is cool, perhaps. I am Bill Buckmaster, and we're live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We live stream the show at buckmastershow.com and at kvoi.com, and we have three places where you can hear our program. It's posted every afternoon to buckmastershow.com, tucsonsentinel.com, and tucsoncitizen.com. Have the Buckmaster Show available for you on the citizen.com site. We are prominently displayed on the home page. Our Friday focus interview today is with Tom Horn, Arizona Attorney General. Joining me to question Mr. Horn, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com and Jimmy Bogle, editor of the Tucson Weekly. If you have a question or comment, call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. And we want to remind you, and gladly so, that Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. It has been an historic legal week for Arizona with the SB 1070 ruling on Monday and the Obama health care ruling that came in on yesterday's docket for the Supreme Court, actually, and then before the justices called it a session and head off on summer vacation, they also rejected Arizona's request to let its proof of citizenship requirement for people registering to vote remain in effect as it appeals a ruling that found the mandate conflicts with federal law. Joining us now for our Friday Focus interview, Tom Horn, the Arizona Attorney General. Mr. Horn, how are you this afternoon?
It's always good to be with you, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Horn. We've got lots of ground to cover over the next half hour. What about this voter registration rule rejected? Does the state now continue with the appeal to the Supreme Court?
Yes, we're very busy preparing our petition for certiorari with the U.S. Supreme Court.
So nothing really changes by this ruling?
No, other than, right now most people... I'm told by the county recorders say that almost everybody uses the state form. With the state form, you can we can still ask for evidence of citizenship. With the federal form, we would not be able to ask for evidence of citizenship. So those non-citizens who want to vote, I guess, will be asking for the federal form. It'll be kind of interesting to watch.
Okay, here's Jimmy Bogle, editor of the Tucson Weekly, Tom Horn.
Hi, Tom. Of course, one of the very big rulings coming out this week was the SB 1070 ruling, in which three of the four parts were found to be unconstitutional, another part was upheld. What now is your office doing in terms of that law? I mean, post this huge, huge ruling, what is your office doing in terms of SB 1070?
Well, the mandate takes, I think, about 30 days to come down. There's an opportunity for close to 30 days for anyone who files a petition for rehearing. That's highly unlikely to happen, but they have to wait the time. Then they send a mandate to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit sends a mandate to the trial court. Then the trial court would make permanent the injunction on the other three issues and would dissolve the injunction on the first one. And at that point... it would be in effect. Now, a lot of police are doing that anyway. The thing about that provision in Senate Bill 1070 made it mandatory. It's not permissive. If you are a policeman and you legally stop or arrest someone and you have reasonable suspicion the person's here illegally, then you must contact ICE to find out if they're here legally or not. A lot of them do that anyway, but this then would be a requirement.
What did you think of the ruling? A lot of people, it was very funny to see how it was spun. A lot of opponents of SB 1070 were claiming victory. A lot of proponents of SB 1070 were declaring victory. What did you think when the ruling came down?
I thought it was a net plus, not 100%, obviously, because the first provision was the provision that everybody had focused on. That was the one everyone spoke about. It dominated oral argument. When President Obama criticized Senate Bill 1070, he focused on that section, and he didn't represent it accurately. He said that you could go out for ice cream and they could stop you. Actually, they have to have a lawful arrest or a lawful stop before they can inquire about your citizenship. So he was a little inaccurate on that, but that's what he focused on. And so that was the big controversial issue. The other three issues were employee sanctions to be added onto the federal government's employer sanctions, the requirement to carry papers if you're not a citizen, showing that you're here legally, want to say a visa or have permanent residence, and then the last one was warrantless search where somebody had committed a deportable offense. That would be typically someone who committed a serious crime, was imprisoned, got out of prison, they didn't think to deport him, then you could do a warrantless arrest to deport him. Those were much narrower categories than the big one, which was the one that says if you lawfully stop or arrest someone, you must check with ICE if you have reasonable suspicion they're here illegally.
Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn is with us on our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show. Next up, with questions for Mr. Horn, here is Mark Evans, the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com.
I wanted to step away from the big national issues real quick and bring it home to a really local issue and ask you if you could tell us what the status of your investigation of Rio Nuevo is. It's been almost 2 years, I think, since you announced it, and I was just wondering if you were close to giving up or filing charges of some kind.
Well, we're doing a joint investigation with the FBI. Unfortunately, I'm under restrictions where when there's an ongoing investigation, I'm not allowed to comment on it, and that's very frustrating for me. At least two of you had interviewed me many times when I was state superintendent of schools. I was able to answer all questions totally and transparently. Now that I'm Attorney General, I'm under some restrictions as to what I can say, and it's very frustrating for me, as I know it is for you.
Well, let me see if I can get some clarification on the FBI issue, because the political opponents of the city council down here love to call it an FBI investigation. They seem to forget that you're also investigating them. But from what I understood from a few years ago, it was you had asked the FBI to step in because they had a particular expertise, and so it seemed to me better to characterize as an Attorney General investigation in which the FBI was assisting you. But is it fair to characterize this now as an FBI investigation? Are they looking into their own separate issues?
No, I would characterize it as a joint investigation. But I'm not sure I'm allowed to give you more details than that.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Horn, now what about the Obamacare ruling? Your comment, and how does that affect Tom Horn, Arizona?
Well, I had four comments on the Obamacare ruling. The first one was, like everybody else, I was surprised that it was upheld based on the taxation, because those who passed the bill were very emphatic that they were not increasing people's taxes. It was sold on that basis. I think politically it could not have been sold as a tax increase. So we were all surprised at that part of the ruling. My second point is that the point that 25 other attorneys general and I made in our 26th attorney general lawsuit focused mainly on the fact that the mandate was an unconstitutional extension of interstate commerce, and the Supreme Court agreed with that, and I think we do have some important limits set on the extent to which Congress can extend interstate commerce as a way of expanding federal power beyond that which the Constitution envisioned for the federal government. My third point is the one that Justice Roberts made, really, in his opinion, which is they're not saying it's good policy, they're just saying they're not striking it down, and it's really up to the political process to determine whether it's good policy or not. And we have an election coming up soon, and it's a chance for the people to decide, do they want to have Obamacare or not? And in that sense, not only is the presidential election important, but we have a U.S. senatorial election in Arizona, and Obamacare will not be reversed unless the Republican wins both the presidency and the Republicans take control of the Senate. So both of those elections will be very important. And that's the way things should work in a representative republic. The people should make the important decisions in elections, and we have an election coming up for that purpose. My fourth point is perhaps the most interesting one, and that is the decision of the Supreme Court to restrict the ability of the federal government to force states to expand Medicaid. And really, when you look at the extent to which the federal government micromanages our lives, way beyond what the people who wrote the Constitution ever envisioned, the main way they've done that has been not so much the Commerce Clause, although that's been important, but the main way they've done it is by taxing us and then saying, well, they won't spend money in our state unless we agree to their regulations. So they're able to regulate things that in the Constitution they have been given no power to regulate, such as, you know, the highway program or education. And they say, all right, now if you want this money, you have to abide by our 20,000 pages of regulations. And they're micromanaging our education system, for example, without one word in the Constitution saying that that's a proper federal role. And so I think the fact that for the first time in history, the U.S. Supreme Court has said there are limits to the extent to which the federal government can regulate the states by making money conditional on the states abiding by those regulations is a very important ruling, and in the long run may have the most impact of all.
Coming up now in 12:15 on the Buckmaster Show, it's Friday Focus. Our Friday Focus interview today, Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn. Jimmy Bogle is here from the Tucson Weekly. Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. When we come back, Jimmy Bogle will have a question for Mr. Horn concerning TUSD and ethnic studies. So stay with us.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's Friday Focus, 12:18 on the Buckmaster Show. If you would like to join in and talk with the Attorney General of Arizona, Tom Horn, 790-2040, 790-2040. With me in studio, Jimmy Bogle, the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. And up next with Mr. Horn is Jimmy Bogle of the Weekly.
Hi, I just have to ask about ethnic studies. Of course, it's a big deal down here still. It's going to be a big deal in the elections coming up. I know recently the Attorney General, your office, was told that you couldn't really get that involved in the DSEG case because ethnic studies got looped up into the desegregation ruling. And I just wanted to find out what your office is doing right now in terms of ethnic studies, if anything, because you obviously have been one of the biggest opponents of it.
Right. Well, I'm personally defending the there's a lawsuit in federal district court in Tucson challenging the constitutionality of the statute under which Tucson ended its ethnic studies program because of the purported loss of funds. And that's not just my office, but I personally argued the last time we were down there. And in the DSEG case, they say that we can participate, but not as an intervener. So they've invited us to give input and file amicus, you know, friend of the court briefs and so on. And we've retained a an expert who actually is known as a liberal, but she did a study that found that these kinds of programs don't increase academic performance, and we've had her contact the receiver to give him the benefits of the research she's done.
Who is that expert? I'm just curious.
Her first name is Christine. I'm trying to think of her last name. It'll come to me from my subconscious probably before your program is over, and I'll give you her last name.
It's a pretty big deal, if I understand it correctly, when the attorney general gets personally involved and argues a case. Why, you know, several years into this, is this still such a big driving issue for you?
It's a very passionate issue for me, and it has perhaps to do with my biography. When I was young, I was involved in the civil rights movement. I was at the March on Washington in 1963. I just graduated from high school, at which Martin Luther King gave his famous speech saying that he wanted his children to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And I'm a passionate believer that we're all individuals and that what matters about us is our knowledge and our character and not what race we were born into. I find that a really obnoxious philosophy to emphasize to adults, certainly, but especially to kids, that what's important about them is what race they were born into. I think that's a horrible thing to be doing in 21st century United States of America, and I found it just astounding that TUSD was doing that, and I'm absolutely opposed to it. I'm fighting the same cause I fought when I was 18 years old, which is we're all individuals, and race is irrelevant.
Does that mean that you think that, you say race is irrelevant, does that mean you think we've come to a time in our society where we, you know, racism isn't an issue, where racial differences aren't an issue, and do you think that multiculturalism is basically a bad thing?
Well, when we encounter racism, we have to fight it, and we have to fight it wherever we find it, and I think to many people's surprise, you know, until they actually see the materials, they wouldn't actually believe it, there's an astounding amount of extremely blatant racism in these ethnic studies materials. As far as multiculturalism goes, I think it's very good for people to learn about the contributions of different cultures, and indeed the standards, the history standards of our state require in considerable detail a number of performance objectives that all kids learn about the contributions of different cultures. But you want to put the kids together in one classroom and teach them about the contributions of different cultures. What you don't want to do is divide them up by race, so that they're only in the class or primarily in class with kids of their own race, learning about the contributions just of that race. School is a place to raise kids' horizons, not to narrow them.
Wasn't ethnic studies open to all everyone, though? It wasn't just open to kids of a certain race.
It was, but the statistics show that the overwhelming majority of the kids in a given ethnic studies class belong to that ethnicity.
A quick follow-up to the talking about multiculturalism, Mr. Horn. The TUSD has hired a multiculturalism director. We had the TUSD board president was on with us yesterday, Miguel Cuevas. You have any problems with the hiring of this multicultural director?
Yeah, I think that's a waste of money. I would rather see them hire another teacher and break up someone's class, so instead of 40 kids, they'd have 20 kids each.
Okay, here's now Mark Evans from Tucson Citizen.
You and Secretary of State Ken Bennett proposed a modest strengthening of campaign disclosure rules in the recent legislative session that didn't pass, and your spokesperson infamously said that your effort to push the bill was handicapped because the legislature controls your budget. Are things really that bad at the legislature that if you try to strengthen campaign finance, you risk retaliation by the legislature?
I wonder if there are two concepts being conflated here. Where we talked about the fact they regulate our budget is where we were fighting them taking away our mortgage funds.
That's right. I'm sorry.
And we fought very hard against them taking away. They took $50 million out of our $110 million. We fought very hard against that. But once they had decided, not just the legislature but the governor as well, we had to concede to that. We couldn't. Defy them because they could take it out of our budget, as an example. With respect to the campaign finance law, there was no lack of effort on our part. I actually testified before the committee, and that was a legislative decision for the bill not to move forward. I was totally for it, willing to do anything I needed to do to help it, I would certainly fight for it in future legislatures. I think the Arizona Republic, which is not represented in this group, so I can criticize them in their absence, unfairly blamed Ken and me for not pushing hard enough. We were both in favor of this bill, and if they want to blame someone, they need to deal with the members of the legislature on that one.
And you're embroiled in your own campaign finance scandal. Wouldn't improving the disclosure laws prevent accusations like the ones you're facing now because of the anonymity and you really don't know who candidates are meeting with and whether they're funding certain campaigns and whether that funding came out of any of these meetings? I mean, the amount of donors in the state's very small. It's hard for someone who's in a political candidate for office to have specific meetings. The question is whether collusion took place.
No, I agree with you 100%, and I'm a passionate advocate of more disclosure on independent campaigns, and the accusations that have been made against me are completely false and don't cause me to subtract one whit from my passion in favor of more disclosure requirements on independent campaigns.
Mr. Horn, we're going to go now to the Buckmaster Show live line. AJ is with us. Go ahead, AJ. You're with Tom Horn.
Yes, good morning. Very good subject. I just want to say that I respect the fact that you were in the civil rights movement and carried over to this day. I'm also of that era, and I just want to say that all of us, you know, the families, the parents, need to use common sense with their children to respect each of our cultures, because that's what the United States of America is made up of, immigrants. My parents came from Ellis Island, landed there years ago. But the point being, that's what we should carry over, and not to make, and again, individualism is okay, and spreading the universality of and respect the culture from where we came, but at the same time, we are one here in America. That's all.
Mr. Horn, quick response.
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but I'm a naturalized citizen myself. I was born in Canada. My parents were refugees from Hitler. They were Jewish people in Poland. My father predicted that Hitler would invade in September 38. He actually invaded in September 39 and went around telling his friends and his family to leave. Most of them didn't want to. He had to force... But my mother didn't want to leave. My older sister was already born in Poland, but in those days husbands had more influence over their wives than they do now, and he made her leave. But the rest who stayed were all killed in the Holocaust, and the reason he knew to leave was because he was a student of history and he was able to interpret current events. And that's one of the reasons that when I was superintendent of schools, I emphasized the importance of our kids learning American history so they will also be good interpreters of current events, because the survival of my immediate family resulted from my father having been a close student of history.
Jimmy Bogle, you have a quick one for Tom Horn?
Yeah, sure. We were just talking about reporting requirements when it comes to contributions. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on limits. Obviously, with the Citizens United decision, pretty much anyone can give any amount of money. Obviously, Citizens United has really cut down on the reporting requirements when it comes to super PACs. I'm sorry. What's your personal opinion on what's appropriate? Because we're going to see record spending, there's no doubt about it, pretty much all levels for the upcoming political season.
Well, the key decision, in my opinion, isn't so much Citizens United as is Buckley v. Valeo. Buckley v. Valeo was decided a number of years ago where they said you could limit contributions to campaigns, but you couldn't limit independent expenditures. And that is all that Citizens United did was extend that to corporations, but the bulk of that money is still coming from individuals. So the big effect was Buckley v. Valeo rather than Citizens United. And the result of that has been that vast amounts of money have been directed away from the campaigns where the candidate is responsible to independent campaigns where the candidate is not responsible, and things have gotten much more negative. So it may be that if we can't limit all contributions, it may be we shouldn't limit any and rely on disclosure, but allow people to give to the candidates in an unlimited amount if they could have independent campaigns that are in an unlimited amount. And that way candidates would be more responsible for what's said on their behalf or against their opponent, rather than the situation we have now, which I think is the worst of all possible worlds, which is that the campaign that the candidate is responsible for is limited in funds, and the independent campaigns where the candidate can say, well, you know, a lot of bad things were said by the opponent, but it's not my fault because they were independent, you have a lack of responsibility there.
Tom Horn, thank you very much for being with us. I hope you have a great afternoon.
It's great to be with you guys.
Thanks a lot. And we want to thank all the callers. There were several callers who are calling in really at the last few moments of that interview, and we did not get a chance to go to you, but we were able to cover quite a bit of ground with Tom Horn. That will do it for the Friday Focus. We've got the Reporters Roundtable coming up next. Stay with us. SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. President Obama is now surveying damage from the raging wildfires in Colorado, getting a sense of the devastation as he arrives aboard Air Force One. Students who are burdened with college loans will not face even more of a burden. Congress has passed a massive measure that includes a provision shielding them from sharply higher interest rates on those student loans. The top U.S. and Russian diplomats have gotten off to a head start in talks about Syria. A day before they're to attend an international conference on the violence there, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Russia's foreign minister met for about an hour today in St. Petersburg. On Wall Street, the Dow is up about 226 points, 12,828. The NASDAQ ahead, 74. More details at srnnews.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. Time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists sounding off on the week's top stories. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Jimmy Bogle, editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Mark Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. If you would like to join in the conversation, the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. The Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Mark and Jimmy, it sounded like the Attorney General would have loved to have talked about Rio Nuevo.
I would have loved for him to talk
yes,
about Rio Nuevo.
Yes, I think everyone would have.
And it's been 2 years, and you know, granted the records are a mess, but they did seize 1 million pages or more of records, so I guess it would take some time to go through that, but you would think that by now there would be some progress, perhaps even the impaneling of a grand jury, but there doesn't even seem to be any evidence of that. So, I'm still curious about what the federal nexus is that there could possibly be with these funds other than the borrowing on the bond market. But I guess we're just going to have to wait until the investigation finally wraps itself up sometime in the very far future.
And the thing, the longer it goes on, the more these conspiracy theories
right.
start popping up. And I'm not saying there isn't something there. We don't know yet. But conspiracy theories tend to go towards the nutty. And I just want some answers so we can move on and figure out what happened. If there was wrongdoing, punish the people beyond it. But let's get on. I mean, our convention center is still crumbling, for crying out loud.
Well, and at least he gave some small characterization of it as the FBI investigation, because I had always been skeptical of whether it was really a true FBI investigation and it wasn't just the FBI saying, yeah, we have this particular expert in this particular field and we'll help you out here for a couple of months. But it sounded like from him there is indeed a concurrent FBI joint investigation. So at least that sounds more accurate now.
Will the voters in the city of Tucson be in a mood to approve a $100 million bond proposal for road improvements on the November ballot, Jimmy Bogle?
You know, I honestly don't know. A lot of people are declaring it dead, saying people are frustrated with the city and don't trust them with their money. But the fact of the matter is people are also frustrated with our crumbling streets. I mean, right in front of my house, I live over near Reed Park, and there's a huge, giant pothole that I have to maneuver
How
each and every
is it?
Day. It's getting bigger. It's one of those long, narrow ones that's
oh, yeah.
perfect size for a tire.
Yeah, that really takes the tire and the alignment out.
But the fact of the matter is you know, obviously my street's just one little street. This is the case throughout town. A lot of people are frustrated with the graffiti. Not that this has anything to do with the bond initiative, but, you know, we're frustrated with the streets. I think there's a very good chance people might say, hey, yeah, we'll pay a little bit more because we need to get these streets fixed. It's going to be a close race no matter how it goes, I think. But I think people are getting frustrated, and I don't think this is as dead of an issue as a lot of people think it is.
You know, there's a very legitimate argument that can be made that the city and the city council and the city administration have an enormous credibility problem. Rio Nuevo, Parkwise, any long laundry list of scandals within the city in recent years are this gaping chest wound for credibility and trustworthiness with the city. So yeah, you could say an argument, well, why would we want to give them another $100 million? Well, the counter argument then is then okay, then how are you going to fix the roads? Because the city over the last 4 years has cut its budget to the bone. There isn't $1 billion laying around in the city government, which is the actual cost of fixing these roads. This $100 million is actually a drop in the bucket to getting them fixed, and there isn't $100 million laying around either. So if the voters aren't willing to tax themselves to fix these roads or at least get a start on it, well, then what are they going to do? Because the roads and the condition they are does have a cost to the taxpayer. It costs them wear and tear in their vehicles. It costs them the frequency they have to replace their tires. It costs them the claims that get filed against the city whenever the holes in the roads do cause cars to pop tires or go out of alignment. So there is a cost to it. If they don't pass it, then what are you going to do?
I also think that a lot of the it's a lot of punditry for the people who are saying they don't trust the city.
Right.
Because let's face facts. When it comes to elections, with a few exceptions like Nina Trasoff, the incumbents usually win. I mean, Shirley Scott, how many – and I'm not saying she's done any wrongdoing or been bad. Let me make that clear. I'm just using her as an example of voters keep returning incumbents for the most part to the city council. So I think it's mostly pundits doing the criticizing and less the voters feeling that necessarily their city's doing wrong.
And those same voters who put their faith faith in the status quo and business as usual in the council are going to have to turn out and put their faith in the council again and pass this bond measure.
And who's leading the charge? Sean McCluskey, who is active in local politics. And Sean, if you're listening right now, and I know you do listen to a lot of the programs here on KVOI, you're welcome to give us a call at 790-2040, because he's leading the campaign, very active on Facebook, saying it will be defeated, and he's going to lead the charge.
Right, and he does have a track record because he was the one that led the charge against the 1 cent, or I think it was a 1 cent sales tax increase for the city just a couple of years ago. There was a charter change that also included increasing the council's pay, and he led the charge against that, and he won fairly handily. But this is a different issue. Those were things that were kind of take it or leave it. This one is, boy, if you don't take it, you're in trouble. So I understand Sean's passion, but on this one, unless he's got a better idea, he's not helping. He's only causing the problem to get worse.
Ron Barber's first vote was concerning the border, and Matt Hines, who will be on our show, I think it's the lead interview with us on Tuesday. Dr. Matt Hines, of course, is running against Ron Barber in the CD2 race. Matt's criticizing Ron Barber's first vote. Any comments on that, Jimmy?
Matt's not the only one criticizing it. When that vote came down on the very first day he was sworn in, my Facebook page was just going crazy with a lot of his supporters who were very, very upset at this vote.
A lot of fellow Democrats,
a lot of people who'd personally supported him, you know, a lot of people who tend to lean toward the left, and they felt very betrayed by this, that the very first vote he has, he goes against a lot of the environmental types and everything like that that helped get him elected. And I don't know if there's going to be any long-term effects on this, and I think it's also important to point out that Gabrielle Giffords, of course, it's hard to tell exactly how she would have voted on this, but one of her biggest priorities was always border security. And so, let's make it clear, in terms of people on the left, this really, really upset a lot of his supporters.
Yeah, and just to clarify what it is, Mark, it is Ron Barber crossing party lines to vote for a Republican-backed measure that would allow the Border Patrol to bypass more than a dozen environmental laws on all federally managed lands within 100 miles of the borders with Mexico and Canada.
Well, there was that vote. Then he also did it again yesterday because he was one of the few Democrats to vote to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt. Now, he didn't vote for the criminal contempt, but he did vote for the civil contempt. And so there's people that are mad at him about that. Well, look, he's in a 50-50 district now, in District 2 is what he's going to be running for, in which the independents are going to are the ones that are going to carry the day. So he's got to win the independent vote, which means he's got to lean a little bit to the right if he wants to get there. Now, but he still has to get out of a Democratic primary.
That's exactly it. And I still think Matt Hines is a long shot, but he's a little bit less of a long shot than he was before Ron Barber got sworn in, that's for sure.
And I asked Sean McCluskey to call in if he was listening, and Sean is with us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Sean is leading the charge against this this bond measure that the council is going for. Sean, how are you today?
Good morning. Afternoon, gentlemen. I'm doing well. Yourself?
Tell me why you're opposed to this, Sean.
Well, Bill, it's simple. They haven't done what they should do with the money over the past 10 years. There's an open investigation by TPD and the transportation. Kurt Hoff, the transportation administrator, has been on paid administrative leave, costing the city over $53,000 for the last 9 months because the department is so poorly run. You want to give this merry band of thieves $100 million. Are you kidding me?
So those are all valid points, Sean. But then, so how do we fix the roads?
Okay, let's do this. We would all agree that we've decimated police and fire to budget levels of 2008. Yes or no?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's take SunTrend of 2008. There's all your money. Problem solved. Steve King called me an absolute moron for suggesting that because I could never get four votes. You know why I can't get four votes? I can't get Steve King to vote for it. But I bet you Fimbers votes for it because he's up for re-election. Karen will never vote for it. Shirley Scott might go for it. The mayor will go for it because his roads are crumbling and the citizens don't trust him. Well, they trust him more than they trust the rest of the council. And then, of course, we got Paul Cunningham. So we can get four votes, but nobody will propose it.
Okay. Sean, I assume you'll be very active, and we'll be hearing from you again. Thanks so much.
I'm waiting for him to put the proposition on the ballot so we can start our anti-campaign.
Okay. Sean McCluskey, thanks for calling. Thanks a lot. Sean McCluskey on the Buckmaster Show. This is the Friday Reporters Roundtable. This portion brought to you by Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have some fantastic, I was over there last weekend, antique. If you like antique lighting, they've got great fixtures. 2700 North Campbell, Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. Well, the court battle has begun. Jimmy Bogle and Mark Evans over this Arizona 1 cent sales tax, the measure, the petitions. What's the bottom line here?
The bottom line is a heck of a lot of people signed petitions to get this put on the ballot. And on a technicality, granted, there's letter of the law, but a technicality, it is, as of now, not going to be put in front of voters to decide on. And I think that if you truly believe in letting voters decide on things and democracy and stuff like that, this is pretty appalling. Now, obviously, it's not dead yet. This is going into the courts, and the proponents of this 1 cent sales tax have gotten a former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court on their side to battle it. But it's there was a mistake made, but when it comes down to me, they got, I think, almost 50% more signatures than they needed to, and it was kicked off on a technicality, and people aren't going to be allowed to vote for it, and I think that's a shame.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to which particular judge and whether there's enough time for the various appeals and whether the state Supreme, if there are appeals, whether the state Supreme Court will take it, and they'll be able to skip the intermediate level, which is the appeals court, because of the time frame and the need to get it decided, I think, by October, by probably early September in order to get the ballots printed for the November election. We just had in Tucson where petitions were filed and they had incorrect information on the petitions, and a judge rejected them and said the city rejected them, and a judge said, yeah, the city was right to do that. Then we also had a situation in Phoenix where someone didn't have the right information on their petitions, who was a candidate for office, and he was sued to have his petitions tossed, and the judge said, you know what, I'm not going to step in the way of voter intent here because this was a very minor technical error, so I'm going to let these petitions stand. So absent any real case law where the state Supreme Court has said, these are the rules that judges have to follow to determine what voter intent was, I think it's going to end up for the Supreme Court. Now, there was no intent to deceive. There was no intent. The error is minor. It's not all that egregious. The Secretary of State had the proper language in his possession the day the petition number was taken out. It just wasn't the printed one that they were handed. So I would be really surprised to see a judge say, yeah, let's invalidate the voter intent of 230,000-something people who signed this petition.
But you're right. It does come down to the judge or judges who are going to decide on this. I frankly was very surprised in the Tucson case, in which basically voters wanted to put up to a vote this new urban overlay that was put up that would basically allow higher, more dense development in the West University area and some other areas. And even though the city gave the city was the one that gave the wrong petition to these people, and then they got more than enough signatures, the city rejected it because they had wrong language on the petition that the city gave them. I was very surprised that was thrown out as well, and it's actually leading to some neighborhood associations to get together and band together and actually start a whole new group. We actually have an article about that in the Tucson Weekly this week. I was surprised when that was thrown out as well. It just goes to show it all comes down to the judge or judges who are deciding, just like with all the Supreme Court cases this week that were decided by one vote.
And that's been appealed, but I don't think there's going to be a ruling soon enough to have any effect on this Phoenix issue.
But this is huge, the implications, because this is the marquee measure of of all the initiatives. I think this is the one where the most attention is coming. And we had, as I mentioned, Miguel Cuevas, the TUSD board president, was with us yesterday talking about how important this measure could be, because even though TUSD right now is not operating at a deficit, I think he said it was something like they could be facing up to a $50 million deficit for the next fiscal year, 12 months from now. So this is huge.
Oh, this is huge. This is huge in every way. I mean, even down to kids' care, some of the money, a small part of it, but some of the money in this 1 cent sales tax would go towards getting health insurance for young kids who need it. So this is a big deal no matter how you slice it.
And this is an extension of the 1 cent sales tax that voters passed 3 years ago. during the in the depths of the recession and the budget cutting. If this isn't allowed to go before the voters, or if it does go before the voters and the voters reject it, there will be a day of reckoning next year for public education in Arizona, because there the amount of money that this is tax is currently being brought in comes out of the budget, and there is no money left in there to pay for it, considering all the tax cuts that the legislature has passed over the last 2 years. So there's going to be no money for education. In fact, there's going to have to be education cuts, and I don't know how much more we can cut out of public education in Arizona and still call it education.
12:50 on the Buckmaster Show, and the pressure will be on for some kind of ruling, and a ruling very quick on this 1 cent sales tax. Jimmy Bogle, The Weekly, Mark Evans of the TucsonCitizen.com. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay, we got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. That's coming up next. Stay with us.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
And of course, that theme is synonymous with the weekend and Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, brought to you by Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. Great place to get away from this hot weather. 3.5 hours east of Tucson, not a bad drive at all. So much to do at a mile-high elevation, birding along the Gila River. You can hike the Continental Divide Trail. So much to do in historic Silver City. Great accommodations, including Spirit Canyon Lodge. Find out more about Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Joining us now for Weekend Watch, the culinary cruiser himself, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
I'm hungry and I'm thirsty, Bill. But enough about me.
Whenever this guy is hungry and thirsty, look out, the cruiser is on the move. Any good happy hours that you're pointing to on this Friday?
Yeah, great question. There's so many great happy hours to choose from, Bill, as we kind of wind up the work week here at Russell Public Communications. But the one we have our eyes on today, Bill, is Jack's Kitchen up on Oracle and Ina. Now, they've just rolled out a new infusion cocktail that sounds really refreshing. Listen to this. Strawberry-infused vodka with a grapefruit granita, fresh lime juice, and a vanilla bean and black peppercorn simple syrup.
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness. It's got a little sweet, a little tart, and even a little heat on this one, and I think it's going to go beautifully with their pretzel-crusted calamari. They're both on special today for happy hour, which starts at 4 o'clock at Jack's Kitchen.
Yeah, that takes a mixologist who really knows what he's doing to put something like that together. You said you're wrapping up the weekend at Russell Public Communication, the award-winning offices up there on Sunrise. Actually, the weekend begins when you come in the funny-looking T-shirt at about, at about 10 a.m. Quickly look at the mail. The meeting is canceled. I am out to lunch.
That's when we all clock out, right after breakfast.
Yeah. Any barbecues? 4th of July is usually synonymous with a great barbecue.
Sure is, and we don't have to wait till Wednesday to start the partying. Of course, this Sunday at 5 o'clock at night, the Desert Diamond Casino, just down I-19 in Suarita, is going to be hosting an all-American backyard barbecue, which is going to feature live country rock music, an amazing barbecue spread, some fireworks at sundown. So when you package up great music and delicious cue and great entertainment, we can't imagine a better way to start your Independence Day celebrations. 3 days early, nonetheless, Bill. It all starts Sunday at 5 at the Desert Diamond Casino in Sarita.
Hey, why not 5 days early? Why not start your 4th of July festivities tonight? So much going on. Tucson Originals, they've been putting together some great summer specials. Who are you focusing on right now?
Yeah, the Tucson Originals, great local independent restaurants. We like Rocco's Little Chicago for this weekend's dining on Broadway just east of Tucson Boulevard. They've got a great large thin crust pizza with two toppings with either a double house salad or six breadsticks, all for only $20. So let Rocco take care of you with this special all summer long, or you can go to TucsonOriginals.com to see all of the summer specials. Now, Bill, if it were me, I'd go for the smoked bacon and portobello mushroom on my pizza. What about you?
Oh, man, I think I would go for probably, I like a little chicken and a pineapple, and we'll go Hawaiian-style pizza. How does that sound?
I mean, it puts me in the spirit of celebration with pineapple on my pizza. Attaboy.
As we always say, Matt Russell likes to wear a funny-looking T-shirt around the holidays. And this one, he's got the American flag ready for the 4th of July and ready for fireworks, ready for good eating, and maybe a great happy hour, as you mentioned, at Jack's Kitchen. So, Matt, we want to hope that you put together a great weekend for you and your team.
Absolutely. Stars and stripes forever, Bill Buckmaster.
All right. Thanks so much. Matt Russell. It is the 4th of July week coming up next. We've got great shows lined up for you coming up on Monday. Of course, we'll have our Monday political face-off. And then we have asked University of Arizona economist. He's probably the most knowledgeable man on the Southern Arizona economy. That is Marshall Vass from the University of Arizona. He will spend the second half of the noon hour with us on Monday as we come up on really the first work day of the fiscal year. We'll be asking Marshall to evaluate the first 6 months of this year. Where is our economy? Where have we been? And where are we going? That's coming up Monday on the Buckmaster Show. I want to tell you that bottled water on our program is provided for, and we are very glad that they do. Culligan Water, offering the best drinking water, the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. They've got it all for for you. That's Culligan Water. Fridays on the Buckmaster Show. The Friday show is presented in part by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Also a big shout out to our CPA, Michael C. Flowers, certified public accountants at Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 2919 East Broadway. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of our team, my producer, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend, and we will be back with you 12:04 on Monday afternoon. Have yourself a great weekend.